This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
But in India, we don't have a single case of polio. The only reason is vaccination. So vaccination is a must for everyone. And that is what I try to say to the people. You don't have to worry for a short period of time, yeah. Right? You don't have to be like in a fear, but you have to see the longer thing. Like, you can prevent your child from bigger complications. The lethal complications of the vaccine preventable disease. That is what I convey my message through my videos.
Yeah.
And vaccine can be like, you know, enjoyable thing also. I can sing for them. I can dance for them.
Yeah.
Very cool thing to do. So that is what I wanted to spread this kind of message to entire world.
Welcome back to the Peds Doc Talk podcast, a top 50 parenting podcast in the United States, thanks to you and your reviews. And I can't express enough how much your reviews and ratings help the show grow so we can continue to have the most incredible guests and conversations like the one I'm having today. Today's guest is truly an honor to have on the show. His name is Dr. Imran Patel. He is India's favorite pediatric influencer with over 4.2 million followers on Instagram and over 1.4 million YouTube followers. So India is home to over 1.4 billion people and over 470 million children. There are more children in India than our entire population in the United States. So I needed to have a pediatrician to chat with from India. And from a personal note, I'm also Gujarati, just like Dr. Imran, who is practicing in Gujarat, where my parents are from. So I just loved seeing his work that he's doing in the country that my parents were raised in. So I cannot wait to chat about the similarities and differences in raising kids in India and the United States and just being pediatricians in both of our countries. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Imran.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I am so excited I found you. You know, I found you on my Explore page on Instagram, and I found a video of you giving vaccines to your patients, and you were distracting them by like tapping on the table and singing and playing. And so they barely even cried. And I love that and wish more patients were given that approach. But tell us more about yourself, why you became a pediatrician, and also why you started your social media platform.
So basically, what I would say, I love my job and I love children, because what I think and I feel, children are the innocent creature of God. Mm-hmm. They are so nice. They don't judge you. So when you're kind to them, when you love them, they love you back, right?
Yeah.
So I love children. My love for the children was the main reason for selecting my branch, that is pediatrics. So the second question was why I started recording my work. Just like that, I was not aware that I'll become the India's number one so-called pediatric influencer or doctor. But I was showing my work to the people and people liked it. I'm so glad that God is kind to me that people liked it. And that is what I was showing in my videos also. Okay, if you're kind to the people, to the children, and you know, everybody is going to like it. Parents are happy. I am happy. And when child doesn't cry, so it's a win-win situation for all of us. So, and even I enjoy my work.
Yeah, and you were telling me, so you are obviously a pediatrician, but you also own a children's hospital, right, in India? Where you, tell me more about that.
I have a hospital named Asian Children's Hospital in Ahmedabad, India. It's a 100-bedded hospital. I have a big team for running the entire hospital. We have a facility of ICU facility for newborns, for pediatric patients. We have facilities for the surgical patients. I have a hospital in Ahmedabad.
Amazing. And so you're doing a little bit of everything. I mean, you're seeing patients, running a hospital, obviously just having all of this information on social. And for anyone who's not following, you definitely need to give him a follow, because like I said, it's just really nice the way he approaches children, which is obviously how most pediatricians should be approaching their patients. But his page just exudes a lot of love and kindness, like he's saying. And so I love that. Dr. Imran Patel, official. I'll be tagging his Instagram handle on my show notes. But again, you're sharing how you interact with your patients online. You also obviously are giving educational information. And when you actually just go through your comment section, like you said, you're just really loved. And I feel like you're loved because of how loving you are towards your families and your patients. So thank you for all the work that you're doing in India and reaching so many abroad too.
Yeah, thank you so much. I said, what I believe, love has no boundaries.
Yeah.
So many people from abroad are loving me. They don't understand my language because most of my videos are in my native language, that is Hindi. So because the reason of being record a video in my language that maximum people should understand my, in my country especially,
right,
should understand what I mean to say. That was my purpose, and to spread positivity and love amongst the people.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad that people from outside my country also loving my work and my this thing videos. I'm so grateful to the God and the people around you, like you.
Yeah.
That likes.
Well, I obviously connect with you, not only just for my love of children, but also being a pediatrician. And so when I found your page, I'm like, wow, like I love it. And I just, it's inspiring. You know, it just helps. It helps me also want to continue to be a loving pediatrician. You know, I don't give vaccines to my own patients. We have like a staff that does that in the United States at many of our offices, but I used to at my old practice before I worked where I currently did, I used to give vaccines too. And so, you know, it's just nice. It's nice seeing how you approach not only vaccination, but like all the things, you know, interacting, playing with the children. So I love that.
So the Ramona, that we all know that we are all in a learning process.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how old are you, we should keep learning and motivate others. Sometimes my critically ill patients also motivates me.
Yeah.
When they fight the disease and when they come out. So that kind of inspiration I get from my patients also. So that is what we should do in this world, to motivate others in a very positive way, and to love our job. And with honesty, and we should do it in that way only. That is what I believe.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I'm just so excited to connect. I know we have busy schedules and a 10 and a half hour time change. So thank you for sitting down and doing this with me. And, we're going to be diving into just a lot of differences and similarities. So from sleep, feeding, vaccine acceptance, and so much more. So first, you know, I want to talk about again how I found you, which was your videos of giving vaccines to patients, making it fun and less scary by singing to them, distracting them so they barely even cry. And I love also seeing you normalize vaccines and fun ways to give them. And to be honest, in the United States, we struggle a lot with vaccine hesitancy, or what we call here anti-vaccine sentiment, where people deny vaccinations even though it's available to them. I'm curious, do you see that in India as well?
The thing is, India is a very big country.
Yeah.
As you say, 1.2, 1.4 billion people, right? So on the countryside, still patients are not aware or educated about the vaccination and vaccine preventable diseases. But still, our government is playing a major role nowadays. They have been going to the individual houses and explain them about the vaccination, and they are giving them at free of cost.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they do not hesitate, but they don't have there is a lack of knowledge. And what they feel, like a simple vaccine, I would say DPT. So if a cellular component of pertussis, we are using it, it has a side effect like fever and pain at the injection site. So they are scared of that. They said, oh my goodness. After giving vaccination, my child will be sick for 2 days, and how I'm going to, you know, handle it. So they have that kind of a fear, I would say, and lack of education is a thing. But I would not say that in our entire country, yeah, people are giving vaccinations, and it's not an entire vaccine thing over here. We give on a very regular basis, and that is the reason we have achieved the polio-free country. We have done that because of vaccination. Still in Asia, in a country like Afghanistan, Pakistan, Bangladesh, we see polio cases. But in India, we don't have a single case of polio. The only reason is vaccination. So vaccination is a must for everyone. And that is what I try to say to the people. You won't have to worry for a short period of time,
yeah.
right? You don't have to be like in a fear, but you have to see the longer thing. Like you can prevent your child from bigger complications, the lethal complications of the vaccine preventable diseases. That is what I convey my message through my videos.
Yeah.
And vaccine can be like, you know, enjoyable thing also. I can sing for them. I can dance for them.
Yeah.
It's a very cool thing to do. So that is what I wanted to spread this kind of message to entire world.
Well, I love hearing that. You know, I love hearing that. Obviously, not only the government is trying to do their part to educate and also remove that fear, but it sounds as if the sentiment that you're saying is that people just want to be educated more, but that there isn't that sentiment of, well, I'm not going to do it at all. I just want to learn more before I actually do it for my child.
Yeah, yeah, that is true. But in India, it doesn't happen like that. In India, yeah, still the people of India, they believe their doctors. And when we say, when we explain them that nowadays people are aware of that and they are giving vaccination to their children without hesitation because of so many vaccinations has been covered under the government program and even the private hospitals are motivating them, the private doctors also, to get them shot. So they are doing that and I'm glad that people of India now has taken this seriously and they have understood that many diseases can be only prevented by giving vaccine to the people.
Now let's take a break to hear from our sponsors. Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. With 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from each week, you'll always have new flavors to explore. Crush your wellness goals this May with dietitian approved meals and ingredients you can trust. I absolutely love the spicy jalapeno, lime cheddar chicken, and mushroom chicken thighs with wild rice. Keep kitchen time to a minimum with Factor meals because they're ready in 2 minutes, no shopping, prepping, cooking, or cleanup. I work from home and love the convenience and how delicious Factor meals are. Head to factormeals.com/PedsDocTalk50 and use code PedsDocTalk50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code PedsDocTalk50 at factormeals.com/PedsDocTalk50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. We know that as a busy parent, it's important to keep our lives simple and convenient, especially at mealtimes. Little Spoon is one way to help you do just that. Little Spoon delivers fresh, healthy meals and snacks straight to your door that your kiddo will love at every eating stage that they're in. Little Spoon offers baby blends, biteables, and plates. We love the biteables, which are early finger food meals that are cut to size for easy pinching and grasping and are veggie-packed, high protein with low sodium. They also have smoothies, snacks, and lunchers that aim to please. And did I mention it all comes right to my door? So flexible, so easy, and everything stores right in the fridge and freezer. I pick the menu and change up what I order every time. The price is right. The quality is unmatched, and everyone loves it, and it can be yours too. Simplify your kiddo's mealtime and your mental load with 30% off your first order. Go to littlespoon.com/PedsDocTalk and enter our code PedsDocTalk at checkout to get 30% off your first Little Spoon order.
Awesome. And I know the vaccine schedule is probably different from here and India. Do you, what is kind of there right now that's available for children?
So what I have heard that I have seen patients coming from like NRI patients who comes in India and me from Australia, from Canada, from UK or from America too. So what I have seen that they do not give BCG vaccination over there at the time of birth, which is like to helps in prevent from complications of tuberculosis. So BCG vaccination is not there, but we do give vaccination, BCG vaccination at the time of birth only. It is compulsory and even in the government, in the private sectors, we give that. Otherwise, most of the vaccinations are covered. But here in India, the foodborne diseases like hepatitis A, typhoid, we do give that vaccine also on a very regular basis to our patients. I don't know how the USA, I don't think so they have been giving, right?
So we have, yeah, I love this conversation. So we have hepatitis A available. We don't have a typhoid vaccine routinely because it's not as prominent in the States, but hepatitis A is recommended in our practices at 12 months and then again at 18 months or 2 years. And then, like you said, we don't do tuberculosis here. We have hepatitis B, your DTaP, so pertussis, HIB meningitis. We have Prevnar, which is your pneumococcal. We have rotavirus, which is for diarrhea. And then we also have your chickenpox, measles, mumps, rubella. And then, yeah, so I'm curious.
Japanese encephalitis we also give. And we give flu vaccine in flu.
Yes, us too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we give flu vaccines also. So almost, yeah, the we give few extra vaccines than America, yeah. What they do. So we give extra shots to our people because of foodborne and waterborne diseases are more in my country. So we give that.
And so you all, there is measles, mumps, rubella, and chickenpox that's recommended and routinely given?
Yes.
Amazing. See, I loved having you on because, again, I don't know any physician, pediatrician in India. So this was awesome for me to just chat about what's happening there. And I think it's really great for our listeners because I have a lot of listeners in United States, UK, Australia, but then my fifth most populous listener country is India. So I just love getting to hear what we do versus what's happening there. And thank you for clarifying because there's certain illnesses that are common here or illnesses that are common there. Like you said, foodborne illnesses like typhoid. And, you know, we do hepatitis A and there's a lot of families here that are like, well, we're not going to get hepatitis A. And I'm like, well, you can travel internationally, but also in America, we get Hep A outbreaks. You know, we've had from a very popular grocery store here in America called Trader Joe's. There's been outbreaks there, for example, there's been outbreaks in local areas. So just because you're in America or maybe England or UK, an NRI, non-resident Indian country, these illnesses can come, maybe not to the degree that they can happen in India that you're saying, but they're all important. Like I also recommend the normal vaccine schedule to all of my patients, given the things that I've seen. And I'm sure you agree that you've seen vaccine preventable illnesses and what they can do. So you support vaccines because you want to prevent that.
Yes. And we have been seeing patients a lot more than what doctor you might be seeing in USA.
Yeah.
Especially for those diseases like vaccine preventable diseases. We have seen that. We have seen the complication of such diseases. At that time when patient comes, in a complication or a patient is having that disease and we have to get him admitted in ICU. At that time, I feel so sad. I feel so sad when I ask the relatives, why didn't you give the vaccine? They said, sir, well, we were scared. And now, now nothing. Now pray. We'll do our best.
Yeah.
The thing is, you should have given that a vaccine shot. Because the thing is, we have seen the people who have received the vaccines, they are immune to those diseases.
Yeah.
So they do not catch that infection quite often and they can be prevented from such complications, right? So it's a sad thing, but yes, like people like you, Dr. Mona, and people like us, we have a responsibility to spread a good and positive message in our community and the entire human community, I would say, and entire globally, that please vaccinate your children. It is good for the children and you can prevent them from deadly diseases.
Oh, absolutely. I love that we share that from across the world. Again, we're talking about vaccines. We're going to talk about other things. The next thing I wanted to chat about is sleep. So in the United States, you know, we have the AAP, which is the American Academy of Pediatrics. They basically like give recommendations for practicing pediatricians. And co-sleeping is not the go-to for sleep from our academy. It's not the first line recommended. And, you know, we discuss safe sleep, which is in an independent sleep space. We discuss the risks of co-sleeping. But I also know that co-sleeping can be the cultural norm in many countries and cultures. So it shouldn't be shamed. We know that it can exist. But what is the approach in your practice with your patients when it comes to sleep? Is there such a thing as quote unquote safe sleep and independent sleep space? And how do you approach sleep with your patients?
What I believe and what I practice, I tell my parents, relatives and everybody that patient's parents, I would say, my children. Mm-hmm. So I tell them, you sleep with your children till the at least minimum till the age of 8 years or 9.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be with them. It has many benefits for the children because first thing, parents-children bonding increases. Second thing, if we are talking about, okay, pediatrics is all about the age group, right?
Yeah.
You talk about the newborns thing, right? So even in the newborn, they cannot sit or stand by themselves in the very early stages.
Mm-hmm.
So what if they vomit? What if they puke? What if they're crying? What if the mother should be the close to the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Because the warmth of the mother, they feel safe. They feel safe and it is good for them. But yes, at the same time, you have to be very cautious. But I know mother are tired. They do entire, you know, work of the house and then they have to give feed to the every 2 hours to the child. Sometimes they feel sleepy. They well slept and that is the thing. You have to be cautious. You cannot sleep mm-hmm. on your baby. You have to be cautious, but you should sleep with your baby. It increases the mother and the children bonding also. And if child grows up, for example, at the age of 3 and 4 years of age, what I have heard and I have seen in my patient, they dream. They dream, sometimes they get scared. So they need someone besides them who can count on them. They feel secure when they are with the parents. They feel secure. So I would recommend that till the age of 8-9 years, you have to sleep with your babies and that is good for them. And even you feel good, you're sleeping with your baby, right? You can hug them and sleep nicely with them. I get a very good sleep.
Well, you know, this is like the reason again that I'm happy to have you on to hear your perspective, but this is also where I'm going to have to disagree. You know, I respect the differences in opinion and culture and love that our listeners today can hear this because, yes, for some, it can feel better to be close in a bed sharing situation. But for many, it feels better when they sleep separately or perhaps in a different room. And in some situations, I think you and I both know that it can be a risk to share a bed.
Exactly.
You know, I have two kids who I room shared for 6 months for one and 8 months for another, which means in the same room, but they were always in an independent sleep space like a bassinet or crib. And I can say from personal and also professional experience here with the patients I work with that it's not detrimental for a child to sleep independently. So it's not superior for them to bed share, in my opinion, until 8. That sounds like a more personal cultural preference. And so it's interesting to me because yes, this is a different belief. And I won't even say cultural alone because there are probably many Indians in India or Indians outside of India, like myself, who don't believe in bed sharing. And there are many Western parents who want to bed share when maybe, you know, it's more prefer to do an independent sleep situation from what they're hearing. And so I wanted to hear your perspective, given you are a pediatrician in India and how you approach sleep, because I believe that we can all do a better job in providing resources and options for families on how they want to approach sleep without judgment. Like maybe you can provide resources on if a family wants to approach independent sleep, given bed sharing gives them anxiety, or maybe they don't get good sleep bed sharing. And on my end, provide more resources to families if they bed share. And of course, safety concerns and just overall be less judgmental and less like, well, this is the right way. This is what your child is going to, you know, be like if you don't do this or if you do this, you know, well, this is superior and this is what's right. But I want to remind our listeners from my perspective that it is a personal and cultural choice. As long as family, you know, the family knows that there's a safety concern of bed sharing, great. But also if you don't want to bed share, that you're still bonding with your child, that there isn't complete isolation here, your child isn't being abandoned. And you know, you mentioned like vomiting or issues. A parent's still going to go into the child's room if they're needed. It's not complete isolation, like I mentioned. So physical closeness during sleep time doesn't equate to less of these issues or, like I said, superiority. So in my opinion, there is sort of a balance that exists. And to be quite honest, the age of 8, that seems pretty late to say that they need to bed share. But again, this sounds more like a personal cultural perspective. And if it feels right to the family, then that's what's important. And also if it's getting good sleep for everyone. And I also recognize that there may be a cultural aspect, but I hope that we can agree on one thing, that there is no superior approach here. And a lot of these decisions may be guided by maybe culture, how we were parented, or maybe our own beliefs and education if we weren't parented this way and we want to change how things are done.
I would tell you, Dr. Mona, in India, we don't have a people, most of them are not staying in nuclear family. They are in joint family.
Yeah.
We have 4 or 5 children from the single parent, right? And we don't have not everywhere, but if I'll say in the countryside or where they don't have facilities for rooms and everything, and yes. because of issues, then what? They don't have an option. They'll sleep.
Yes.
Everybody's sleeping in the single room. So I cannot deny that also, that from your perspective, I'm completely agree with you. That is not there. If you're not sleeping with your baby, they are not emotionally attached with you. That's not there. But if you don't have an option, it's okay to sleep with your baby. And what people, they have a cultural difference, but that's fine. This is how you raise your children, according to your convenience, right? So it's completely a personal choice. But for the first 6 months, I would say you should sleep next to your baby so that you can pick up the red signal, because sometimes you don't know whether he did not pop, sometimes he pukes, sometimes he's not responding. If he's sick, he's not responding. What happened? So if mother is close to the baby, they can hear the sound. And what I feel, mother can sense everything. Mother sense more than any other.
Yeah.
So that's the reason I was saying otherwise, we are cool each other. We are cool to each other.
No, and I think, the parents, like having the child next to them, whether, you know, for American Academy of Pediatrics and just in general here, like room sharing is what we call it, right? So there's bed sharing, there's room sharing, there's all this terminology. But yeah, recommendation is for the first 6 months, room sharing, and that's what we kind of did. And then I have some families who kind of weigh their, you know, what works for them, like you said, right? Like in America also, a lot of mothers and fathers don't get leave, right? They have to go back to the workforce. So they don't get good sleep if the child is in their room or in their bed. So they want another option, right? And I don't know how it is culturally there. Like, are a lot of mothers and fathers, like, are they going back to the workforce? I mean, that's a huge thing that we deal with in America too, that may impact someone's decision on how to approach sleep.
So in America, most of the mothers, yeah, you're absolutely right. Most of the mothers are working there, right?
Yeah, a lot. India, not everyone, have, but a lot, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of mothers. Yeah. But in India, less number of mothers are working, but still they get leave for the 7 and 8 months initially.
Amazing. Oh my gosh. Amazing.
So that's amazing.
We don't get any. Oh, that's like, amazing.
We are lucky that we are in India. Most of the people are staying in joint family. We have grandparents staying with us to take care of the baby. We have uncles and aunts, and everybody is taking care of the babies. And the thing is, it is very easy to get house help in India. It is very difficult to get in America. So it is very easy to get house help in India so that, that problem doesn't arise over here. So the mother can be involved in other household chores, but at the same time, her baby can be handled by the other family members or the house help is there. So that's a difference in India and America. We handle our baby together and we grow our children together as a family.
We don't. I mean, you're right. I mean, that's when I talk about, you know, parenting and stuff in the States, and especially for a lot of us who don't have that, it is. I mean, going back to even just my parents who immigrated here, they had so much help, you know, when we were born, me and my sister. And there was a whole community approach, even though they were based in America, that everyone comes and helps. And a lot of parents now, I mean, I can say this with true honesty, don't have that support postpartum. So they're struggling, right? I mean, they have to go back to work. And even if they're not working, you know, whether they are stay at home or outside the house, they struggle so much with that lack of support, whether it's for the mom, the father, like there's just not that socialization that I love hearing that is very standard there, because that really helps and to help support the healing mother too after delivering a baby. I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, taking care of the mom too there, right?
Yeah, and we should talk about the postpartum depression also. In India, people doesn't understand that even postpartum depression occurs, right? Mother needs this. Mother needs positive environment for a good breastfeeding. You know, so she needs a good environment. So yeah, in India, it lacks, but still, in India, we are so fortunate enough, if we are alone and if we can ask help from our neighbors also, they are happy to help us. There is a lot of socialization over here. People are emotionally attached to each other. They are not, if they are not family members, still they can understand our emotions. We are going through some bad phase or we are not feeling well. They can cook for us. They come to our home. They take care of the baby. So that is there in India. We share a lot of things with our neighbors also. So that is, we are fortunate enough.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned mom a lot, right? You were talking about mom being near the baby. Culturally, you know, if it's a obviously mom-father relationship, is the dad, do you feel culturally like dads in India are really involved in the child rearing? Or would you say that it's still predominantly kind of considered a mother role, just from a social aspect and social understanding?
I'll be very honest with you, Dr. Mona. And please, to all the fathers, I respect you also. But in India, father has a minimum role.
Yeah.
So most of the time, the baby has been taken care by the mothers or the ladies or women of the family. In India, still it is there. And in the countryside, it is much more of that.
Yeah.
But nowadays, in big cities where people are educated, there even father is taking care of the baby. But in India, mother plays a major role.
That actually, so again, why I like talking about this, because people may not understand that, right? It's so important for us to understand the cultural expectations and cultural aspect of parenting and mothering, that someone listening will be like, well, how is that possible? Like, that's not fair to the mom, but that is a reality. And, you know, that actually was what I grew up with. You know, so my mom and dad immigrated actually from, they have an India-Africa connection. And I know probably in the 1950s, you're aware that a lot of Indians moved to Africa. But my parents immigrated here in the 70s. And although my mom and dad both worked outside the home, right? My mom and dad both had paid jobs outside the home. My mom, just because of the cultural expectations of what we know, was the primary child rearer. And even for a lot of my listeners listening today, that is a social expectation that moms do the primary role. And so I loved asking that question because it's a reality. It's cultural. Do you feel like, though, like you said, knowing that that is the cultural sort of norm, it feels as if from you, when you speak to your families, that the moms do get the support in terms of, you know, I know we talk about postpartum depression and all of that, but you do feel like there is support for the mom to be able to
Absolutely.
Be that primary role, that caregiver.
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
I try to convey my message to all my patients. I tell them mother needs rest. You cannot give more pressure to them. They have gone through the pregnancy period, and that also in the postpartum, especially in the postpartum period, she needs help. She needs help. She's not the only one who is, going to take care of the baby. So you need to support her too. I've been telling my patient nowadays, and yes, culturally, unfortunately, it is there in India. But the thing is, Dr. Mona, we have that system. Father, we do not get leaves, you know, that he has to work to earn the bread and for the family. He has to go out and work entire day. So what he's going to do that? But that is a very unfortunate thing. But nowadays, in a very big cities and everywhere, even father is playing, he is waking up at the midnight and takes the baby, and you know, they're doing that. And I've been seeing that because of this thing, there is a clash between the husband and wife too. Because sometimes wife gets irritated. He said, I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
You have to look at the baby, I'm tired. And husband will say, I want entire day in my office.
Yeah.
To me. Now what am I going to do? I need sleep. So that is the thing, but it's initially for the 6 or 8 months, and then everything goes. Because other family member of the house takes that responsibility. And India, because as I said, in India, we have a system of joint family. Most of them are staying in joint family. It's a very good thing. So they get support from other family members also. So it's not like that in India that it's a very bad thing for the mother to give but the other family member helps her. But yes, even father should play a major role.
Oh, I wish that we had more support here. I mean, I think a lot of my moms listening right now who may be based in America can agree that the expectation is still there that mothers do more of the work, even if we work outside the home. It just still exists.
Yeah.
But the problem is there's no support for us. So, you know, at least there seems to be a little more understanding that, hey, we need to help here. I mean, like I said, the lack of paid leave, the lack of support for breastfeeding if someone wants to breastfeed, but also just that lack of help for mom's healing. You know, it's like it's not ingrained into the culture here, whether a mom decides that she wants to work outside the home or not. So a lot of women struggle because they deliver a baby, they're physically recovering, and they have to either hire help or maybe have someone come. And it's just culturally not the norm. And that can be very isolating for a lot of mothers, especially, you know, we understood that in the pandemic, where a lot of moms just didn't have that support postpartum. You know, those first 6 months, I agree, are very difficult. You know, I think parenting is all difficult in many phases, but those first 6 months, it's a lot for, you know, the sleep, the feeding, all of that, the lack of schedule, like the, you know, regression, like all of that. It's just it's a hard thing. And hearing that there's support and understanding for mom's needs is so nice to hear.
But the thing is, that is what we have been taught. Yeah, mother plays a major role in her upbringing. She has sacrificed a lot of things for her upbringing. So we have been taught that never hurt your mother and father, especially mother. If you want to do or achieve something in your career or in your life, never hurt your mother. She has sacrificed a lot for you. So that is what we have a culture in India. And that is why we respect our mother. We love them because we can understand at this point what she has gone through, what she has gone through, right? So that is that. But that is what I would say. The one thing is very best in India. So whenever in the first pregnancy or second pregnancy, the grandparents usually come and stay with the mother.
Yeah.
So that is a great help for the mother, for the new mother also. That is a great help in India. So that is easily availability of the family members is the thing where they can help.
I loved having this conversation. And again, I so appreciate you and agreeing to disagree about how we approach sleep, because it's not even about disagreeing. It's about just different cultural expectations and norms. And another one I want to talk about is feeding. Like, so when we start, not breastfeeding or formula, but in terms of like when we start feeding solids, you know, so in America, there's, in a lot of Western countries, there's something where we start table foods early on, meaning there's no puree. We just go straight to table foods. And it seems like a very, wow, like how could you do that? But it's makes sense. A lot of kids can do that. And then a lot of Americans, or a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot of Americans, a lot of my followers are surprised that I say that it's okay to season food. You're not giving a child like a spicy chili or anything like that, but you can season food from the beginning. I'm curious, how is it similar or different in terms of your approach to when children start to wean from breast milk or formula?
So we in India, what we prefer that after 6 months, after 6 months, we start giving them liquid diet, like liquid, then we progress to semi-solid. And at the age of 9 to 10 months, a solid food. And by the age of 1 year, they share the table foods. But what I have seen in America and the Western countries, they are not scared of giving solid food at the early age. They keep the child at the child chair and they give them food and they spilled it all over the face and all over the body, but they try to eat that food. In India, we don't do that. In India, people are so much protective about their children. So they try to feed them with their own hand till the age of 1.5 years or 2 years. So that is there. That is what the, happens. Like over here, they are very much protective. They are scared that if their children will get dirty or if their children swallow something, then what will happen to them? So that is there. That is a fear or overprotection of the children. But in America and everywhere, children are developed early. They eat food early. So that is there. But that is a very good thing. That is a very good thing. But what happens is, then in India, children develop temper tantrums.
Yeah.
They don't want to eat by themselves. They
need
mama or father to make them eat.
Yes.
So they need that attention. When you are habitual to that, getting that attention, then you're not going to eat food by yourself. So that is what's happening in India. But in abroad, it is not the situation. It's not the same. So that's a good thing, and that we should get it ourselves from you, that we should practice such things in India. Yeah.
Oh, I loved what you just said, because you're right. So again, I love that we can chat, because my parents and my in-laws, so my husband's also Gujarati American, and so they are so accustomed, because culturally you spoon feed your child until the child is older. But you're right, Dr. Patel, like this is the issue with that, that I see even in families that do it here, right? Is that when we don't allow them self-feeding skills developmentally appropriate. We're not allowing a 4-month-old to feed themselves. Even a 7-month-old may be a little more skeptical to it. But yes, you're right. By 9 months to 12 months, 100% a child who's sitting independently can self-feed. I see it. Like in America, yeah. I see it all the time. But you're right that what happens then is if we're so prone to feeding the child, they don't learn that they're able to do it themselves. And you're right, there's a lot of battles around mealtime. So if you ever want me to chat with anybody about self-feeding from an early age, I'm happy to do that. And also to your point, even though we allow, like, both my children and a lot of my patients self-fed from an early age, but it doesn't mean that we don't still share food with our children or spoon-feed them occasionally, right? Like, there is a socialization of meals, right? So sometimes I'll be eating something and I'll take a spoon off of my plate and spoon feed my daughter, even though she's capable of feeding herself. And even my 4-year-old, right? Like, it's almost like, hey, try this off my plate. But the standard is that they can feed themselves. And then if they can't figure it out, if they are struggling, of course we come to their rescue and support them. And I think that there is a benefit, you know, and I'm happy that you understand that, oh, this could be something different, because I see it. I see that a child who learns to self-feed can learn a lot of skills. They'll still have selective phases. Let's be honest, kids in India, America, United Kingdom, everyone goes through a picky selective phase. But when we have the control, the autonomy to put food in their mouth, there can be less of those battles. I love that. I agree with that.
Yeah. And the thing is, on the basis of scientific research also, if we say, mm-hmm. eating by themselves, which helps them in it is good for the gross and fine development of the child, the gross yeah. motors and fine motors development of the child. So the hand and mouth coordination, how they pick the things, that is good for them also. So I would recommend every parents like listening to in India or America, they are practicing, but in India, from my point of view, yes, please do not hesitate and let them eat by themselves. Let them steal the food. Let them get busy and let them eat by themselves. Don't pamper your child too much.
Yeah, I love hearing this. Again, we've talked about vaccines, sleep, and feeding. Do you feel there are other differences or similarities that you see when it comes to maybe parenting, discipline, the health of children, or raising kids in India versus the United States?
Yeah, the only thing what I feel, people are less disciplined over here, because of a huge population and lack of education. But otherwise, and as I said earlier also, they are too much attached to the children and they are scared of leaving them alone or doing their activities by themselves. I have seen the 2.5-year or 3-year-old child in a Western countries, they swim. But in India, that's not happening. Because the thing is, they feel like they are, after all, they are children. They are not capable of doing the thing, but they need to understand in my country that they are capable of doing the thing. You have to let it go. You have to give them a space where they can develop themselves they can do a lot of stuff. So that is the difference what I feel. Otherwise, we are all same. Yeah. Everybody is doing the best part, and they are.
So you feel like there might be a little more permissiveness when it comes to discipline versus actual, like, you know, boundary setting and things like that.
What I feel in India, what not in most of the part of the India, I would say in a countryside or the people who don't have the facilities or they are less educated, they are lacking discipline. Mm-hmm. And in other way around, in cities where people are educated, they are working, they are well educated, they are over caring for the children. Mm-hmm. They are over conscious, I would say. So you don't have to be over conscious for your child. Neither you should lack discipline. There's a midway. You have to balance that. You have to balance that to raise the child, what I feel.
Now let's take a break to hear from our sponsors.
As a pediatrician, mom, and podcaster, I want to share with you a podcast I recently discovered. It's called Understood Explains, and this season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ertube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. I listened to an episode called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 plans, and I learned so much that I honestly didn't know before. I now feel I can better explain these to my patients and their families and better support them in their neurodiversity journey. Navigating ADHD, dyslexia, and other learning and thinking differences can be confusing, and this podcast helps to validate these struggles and provide actionable tips that are useful for parents, teachers, and clinicians. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
Yeah. No, I love hearing that. And that exists here too, by the way. Like, there's so many different approaches to discipline. And obviously we know that hitting, slapping, we know from a psychological standpoint that that's not okay. But besides that, there are many approaches. But yeah, I mean, I'm big on loving boundaries. You know, obviously we set boundaries, but there has to be love. There has to be respect there, but there's not going to be like this sort of, you can do whatever you want. And I think taking it back to the feeding comment, right? Like, around mealtimes and around screens and around everything that we do with our children. I also feel it's not just India versus US. It's a lot of parents sometimes feel, wherever you're located in the world, that sometimes children, them being upset is a bad thing, when in reality, sometimes they may not like the fact that you turned off the TV, or they may not like the fact that they have to put on shoes or, you know, put on a jacket, but some things just need to happen. And there's a healthy approach to that. I am a big believer of healthy, loving boundaries. Like, it sounds like you are too, and wish more people around the world would be into that as well.
Absolutely, I agree with you. They should be knowing it, what is good for them, because after all, they cannot decide from themselves. We are talking about their development, but they don't have that much power of, understanding the things, which is good and what is bad for the things. They won't understand. So sometimes the over-love, and when you love your children, you're not going to shout at them, you know, deny them for doing something, you know.
Yeah.
So they are not going to understand that. They'll feel like they're not doing anything wrong. So you have to make them a good citizen. You have to make them understand what is good for them, what is bad for them, what is a good habit, what is a good behavior with the others, with the family members. You need to teach them.
Yeah.
So you cannot be too harsh on the children. But yes, at the same time, you need to make them understand the moral values of the human being, of the society. After all, yeah, we are separated by the boundaries, but we are human beings. So globally, we have that responsibility for each other to nurse and raise a good human in the society. So that is absolutely, I agree with you, and there is no harm in that.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, this is such a great conversation. And I want to ask, you know, you mentioned earlier in this conversation about how there is respect for pediatricians or for doctors in India. Would you say that where you practice, there is this sort of respect for what you say? You mentioned it when we talked about the vaccines. That's nice. We don't have that much here.
The thing is, it's not the always thing, but yeah, in India, people worship doctors.
Mm.
Earlier, it was a lot. But nowadays, they don't do that. But even they know that we are paying you, you give the service. But the thing is, when you spread love, I don't feel like I'm a doctor, I'm a big doctor, you have to respect me. No.
Perfect.
I respect them. I love their children. I show kindness to the people. They give it back to me. So if they are more resolved, they are irritable, or they are not in a mood to talk to me, I sing a song for them. I am happy when they look at me. They have to be happy, you know. So that is what I pass on my energy to them. So now that is not the time in India also, that we do expect from the patient that they fold their hands and they say, you are a god. No, we have to respect. We have to treat them with kindness. And we have to treat them with honesty and pure intention. And we have to show love and give them love. They're going to give it back, I'm sure. And I'm getting this from all over the world, especially in my country.
Yes, it's true. I mean, there is a mutual respect, kind of like what we're talking about with children, right? I mean, every relationship, there has to be respect. And so I love that. And I think, you know, in America, it just feels as if there has been a loss of, not so much a loss of respect, but because of the way our system's set up, like patients don't get a lot of time with their pediatrician or with their doctor. So even if a doctor wants to spend that time, there's a lot of like, well, you know, you have to see so many patients and you got to move. And like, it sometimes feels like there's not enough of that love and ability to have that time, even if we want it, which is such a struggle, because it's not like we need a red carpet or need like someone to bow down, like you said, but we want the ability to connect. And so that we can give that respect to the family, they can show that love back. And I think that's just a beautiful message for anyone listening who's a clinician that is practicing, that, you know, it's all about that ability to take the time that you do have to really connect with how you can with that family. And I love that message.
So this is what I absolutely agree with you. The thing is, everybody earns money, right? It is not the doctor profession who earns money. In every field, even chartered accountant or banker or everybody is earning money. But ultimately what doctor does, they are emotionally attached with the patient. They are dealing with the human lives. So even we are human beings, we have emotions. So what we need, we just need, thank you, sir. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, doctor. You have done your best. So that is what we need. That motivates us to come daily and work on our patients. But I'm fortunate enough that I have got so much of love from my patients. Unfortunately, in some cases where we have not been able to save the child's life or in a critical state. Still, you won't believe it, Dr. Mona. People have told me, thank you, sir. You have done your best. We have seen that. They have been telling me that we have seen that your hard work. You have given everything for our children. It's our luck or it's our destiny. But still, you have done your best. That is what makes me do. The thing is, I would have shifted to any other country to earn a good amount of money. But still, I'm here in India because I love that kind of respect rather than money. That is what my... I'm happy when patients is smiling at me and when they say, thank you, sir. God bless you. They tell me that and I love that, and that keeps motivating me. And at that moment, I feel like, all right, that all kind of frustration I'll keep aside, and I love my job.
Oh, and it radiates. Talking to you this whole conversation, it radiates. I feel the same way. I just think, again, it's that gratitude of a simple thank you. I've been there too with the thank yous for when things are going really hard for a family, but also the thank yous when you fix something. Like all of that feels so rewarding, you know, like, hey, I really appreciate you being here and walking me through this. And so I love it. And again, I'm just so grateful that we could connect. What would be your final message for everyone listening? Because there's hopefully people listening from all over the world. What would you want to have people take home after this conversation?
So to all the listeners, this is Dr. Imran Patel from India. I would say spread positivity around you. Love your children. And yes, we are separated by boundaries, but we are not separated by love and kindness to each other. That is the only thing which we can spread in this current situation. We can do that love each other, spread positivity, support each other through digital platforms and through social media platforms. And it's a very good thing that social media platforms, so that we can connect like Dr. Mona and like myself. We get to know each other through social media only. So it's a very good thing. So don't believe in fake messages and fake propaganda. Please listen to your doctors and health workers who have got the degrees and knowledge, and they have been seeing the patients daily. They have given their life on getting such knowledges for your children. So please believe in them and spread positivity and love. That is my message to the entire world.
I love it. I'm just so grateful that you took the time to be here today. It was just such a great conversation, and it's just nice to now have a have a colleague in India. You're my colleague, and I get to connect with you. And if I'm ever there or you're ever here, I hope that we can spread that kindness and love in person, because I really love what you're doing. And again, like you said earlier, you haven't ever talked to a pediatrician in America. I've never talked to a pediatrician in India. So this was a collaboration that I've been waiting for. Where can people stay in touch with you? Again, share your platform, your Instagram, your YouTube, so that people can stay connected.
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram, Dr. Imran Patel Official. You can follow me. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel, Dr. Imran Patel Official on YouTube, and Dr. Imran Patel or even Imran Patel on Facebook. So yes, I'm there, and I hope when while watching my videos, I'm able to bring a smile on your face. That is what my purpose is, to record a video and show it to the people in the entire world.
And it does. I will link all of this for everyone listening. Again, to my show notes, you're going to get his handle. And even though I am a pediatrician and do exactly what Dr. Imran does, but just do it in a different country, I love following him because of all the things that he's saying, the desire to spread love and kindness and the way he interacts with his children. I don't share videos from my interactions with patients because of all the things that my practice doesn't allow. But if I could, I wish. I'm going to start my own, because it is such a beautiful thing. And also what you're doing, Dr. Imran, is you're normalizing going to the doctor, which I think is so healthy for families to see, right? Like showing a child that this is a doctor, this is someone who's going to help you so that they're not as scared, so that they can be advocates for their health. So you're doing that with your at the time of this recording, 4.2, I'm sure it's going to be even more. So thank you.
4.4 at the moment.
Yes,
at the moment,
and you're growing. Yes, exactly. And I know this is going to release, recording it in March, it's going to release in May of 2024. But I love seeing where you're going. As a fellow pediatrician, it's just such a beautiful thing to see. And you see me commenting on your posts all the time, like a fan, but you're my colleague. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. It was nice talking to you, Dr. Mana. I got so much information how you practice in America, and was the thing, we'll keep connecting and we'll stay in touch.
Yeah.
And together we can we'll try to change the world. Yeah.
Yes. Likewise. I feel the same. I love getting to hear your perspective. And so for everyone listening, I'm sure you love this conversation. It was just so important to hear how things differ, but also at the end of the day, how similar we all are. If you love this episode, make sure you leave a rating and review. Remember, this is how the show continues to grow. And also if you liked it, make sure to share it on your social and tag Dr. Imran, tag my platform as well, so we can see that you love this episode. And I cannot wait to connect with Dr. Imran in the future and chat with another guest next time on this podcast.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're aiming more of a, we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, Mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.